I'm pulling my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time to drive to work. Okay, so today I'm going to do other of my increasingly poorly named series, 20 Years and 20 Podcasts. I think I'm up to like 22, 23. Anyway, so what I've been doing is I've been taking every year that magic has existed and in the series and talking about what happened that year. So I'm up to 2013. So I'm approaching the present. We're getting pretty close. Okay, so let's talk about what happened in the lovely year 2013. The lovely year 2013. Okay, January 26th was the pre-release, and February 1st was the release for Gatecrash, a.k.a. Line. I think it was Hook, Line, and Sinker. So it had 249 cards, like most large sets of its time, 101 commons, 80 uncommons, 53 rares, and 15 mythic rares. This came out in the winter, but it was a large set. In fact, it was the first time ever that the winter set, or the quarter one set, was a large set. And the reason was, we had returned to Ravnica. And we came up with this neat idea of having 5 guilds in the first set, which was Return to Ravnica, 5 guilds in the second set, which was Gatecrash, and then all 10 guilds in the third set, which was Dragon's Maze. I'll get to that in a little bit. But anyway, this was a large set with the other 5 guilds. So this set had Boros, which was red-white. It had Gruul, which is red-green. It had the Simic, which is green-blue. It had the Dimir, which is blue-black. And it had the Orzhov, which is white-black. The design for this set was led, it was co-led. I led the first half, and Mark Gottlieb led the second half. What had happened was, I had done the previous year Innistrad, then did Dark Ascension. Ken Nagel had led the first set, which was Return to Ravnica. And in order for me to lead the next set, which is Theros, which we'll get to also later today, I needed to duck out halfway through. Meanwhile, Mark Gottlieb had led small sets, but had never led a large set. And so as a way to sort of, you know, get into the pool without throwing me in the deep end right away, he and I worked together, and then I sort of led the first set. Halfway through, handed the reins to Mark, who led it on the second set, second half of the set. Anyway, there were 5 mechanics because there were 5 guilds. So Boros had Battalion, which was a mechanic that said if 3 or more creatures attacked, a bonus happened. So things that said, oh, if I have 3 more creatures attack, something happens. And so it encouraged you to attack with a bunch of creatures, which fit Boros, which has an army sort of flavor. The Gruul had Blood Rush, which were creatures that you could sacrifice, you could discard from your hand to turn them into giant growths that matched the power toughness of what the creature was. There was Evolve, which is the Simic mechanic, and those were creatures that if you played a creature with a power or toughness greater than their power or toughness, they got a +1/+1 counter. So you would play them, and as you played other creatures, they would continue to grow. Oh, by the way, Battalion was a mechanic made by Sean Main for the Second Great Designer Search, and Evolve was a mechanic made by Ethan Fleischer for the Second Great Designer Search. So each one of them, I definitely, when we were doing the search, I realized we had interesting guild mechanics, and it turns out that 2 of them were in the guilds I was doing, so I used them. Cypher is the Dimir mechanic. What Cypher does is they are spells that you then get to essentially linked to creatures. So what they do is the spell goes off, and then if you would sort of link it to a creature, and then whenever that creature does combat damage, the spell effect happens again. This was one of the mechanics that was very cool in concept, and execution didn't play out quite as well. I think development was a little afraid of it and sort of had to pull back, so it's one of those mechanics that I didn't quite sell as much as it did in concept. Finally, Orzhov's mechanic was Extort. And Extort said, whenever you played a spell, you could spend a white or black mana, it was hybrid, to drain your opponent for 1. So for each Extort spell you had in play, once I have a couple Extort things in play, every spell I'm playing, I can be drain. Assuming I have the mana, I can be draining my opponent for a bunch of life. So this set was, like I said, the second set in the block. It was designed to be drafted by itself. So we had a neat, the block structure was pretty cool. Let me talk about that for a second. So the first set, Return to Ravnica, had 5 guilds in it. It was a large set. You drafted it by itself, like you normally do with a fall set. The second set, Gatecrash, was also a large set, and it was drafted by itself. And then when the third set came out, which is a small set, Dragon's Maze, you drafted one Return to Ravnica, one Gatecrash, one Dragon's Maze. In fact, I think Dragon's Maze went first. So Dragon's Maze, Gatecrash, Return to Ravnica. So the neat thing was, in this, you drafted with just Return to Ravnica, Return to Ravnica, Return to Ravnica. Then you drafted Gatecrash, Gatecrash, Gatecrash. And then only when the third set came out did you cross the lines. Like, Return to Ravnica and Gatecrash never mingled until the third set. But in design, we worked really hard to make sure that they worked well together. And so when you finally got to crisscross them, you had some neat interactions. There were some... in the end, I think Gatecrash ended up being a little faster than we meant to be. And so when you mix Gatecrash with Return to Ravnica, you tended to veer toward the Gatecrash guilds because they were a little bit faster. But anyway, I'll talk about that when I get to Dragon's Maze. But anyway, Gatecrash unto itself is very popular. In fact, I think the best-selling winter set of all time. A little cheaty because it's also the only large set winter set of all time. But it was, in fact, very popular. It was very popular. Okay, next. February 16th to the 17th, Pro Tour Gatecrash was held in Montreal, Canada. It was a standard tournament for the constructed portion, and it was a Gatecrash booster draft for the limited portion. Sorry, for a second. Somebody cutting in my lane. Yeah, people always, I find it funny that there's this the conspiracy theory that I sit in, like, I have a special, like, lab I sit in, like a little sound booth, and I have little sound effects to sound like I'm driving. But as a person, as the fact that I'm actually driving and cars are getting in my way, and I have to occasionally pause from talking to you to make sure that I'm being safe, which I do. I am, in fact, driving in a car on the freeway as we speak. Anyway, Pro Tour Gatecrash. So Tom Martell, United States, defeated Joel Larsson of Sweden, who they called the Swedish Brian Kibler. The one other interesting little historic factoid from this tournament was Melissa DeToro became the first female to ever top eight a Pro Tour, which is very exciting. And for those that I've had Melissa on my podcast twice, and I'm hoping to have her on again. So her two podcasts with her were quite popular. Okay, next, March 15th, was Duel Decks, Sorin versus Tybalt. So every year, there is a Planeswalker duel deck with two Planeswalkers fighting each other, and a non-Planeswalker, which is themed usually to one of the sets it comes out with. So this was the Planeswalker one, it was Sorin versus Tybalt. So the way it works is you have to go back a year. So if you go back a year to Innistrad, we always take two Planeswalkers from that set. So from Innistrad, we took Sorin and Tybalt. Both of which, by the way, are natives of Innistrad. So this was an Innistrad native fight. So Sorin, I assume, was white-black, and Tybalt was at least red. I don't know if it was a second color in the deck. But anyway, dual decks. Okay, next, that gets us to April 3rd, pre-release. April 27th, sorry. April 27th, pre-release. May 3rd, release of Dragon's Maze, a.k.a. Sinker. So it was a little bit bigger. It was a small set, but it was a little bit bigger than a normal small set. Had 156 cards, 70 commons, 40 uncommons, 35 rares, and 11 mythic rares. We've recently made small sets a little bit bigger with Oath of the Gatewatch. This is us playing in that space earlier on. So we now have 70 commons in a small set, and this has 70 commons. So this is definitely some of a template when we're looking for what to do with Oath of the Gatewatch. Anyway, the lead designer for Oath of the Gatewatch was Alexis Jensen, the winner of the first Great Designer Search. And the lead developer was Zach Hill, who is no longer with R&D, moved on to other things. So the idea of the set was it had all 10 guilds in it. So mostly what it was there was just the 10 guild mechanics. We had 5 guild mechanics in the first set, 5 guild mechanics in the second set. All 10 were in this set. Although, I think we kept them out of common to keep from overwhelming people with keywords. I think they started showing up in uncommon. I don't think they showed up in common. There was one new introduction, though, was Ravnica has always had hybrid, and the original Ravnica had split cards. Well, we brought split cards back. We had saved them for here. We thought it was a good place when you're doing all 10 to have some split cards. And we introduced a mechanic on split cards called Fuse. So what Fuse does is it says you can play not just one of the two split cards, but if you want to, you can play both of the split cards. It was called, what do we call it? Split Entwine, I think is what we call it in design. It was a combination of split cards with Entwine. Entwine was a mechanic from the original Mirrodin where you had a modal choice and you could get all the choices if you paid the modal costs. And that was Entwine. So anyway, Fuse was quite popular. This had some problems. Number one, I think we had set ourselves up. Doing five guilds in a large set is doable. We did that twice. Doing 10 guilds in a small set, even if you've already set it up with two previous large sets, is a lot. There's just a lot going on. There's a lot you have to handle. And it was a little bit overwhelming. We would never normally put, in fact, if you count Fuse, 11 mechanics in a small set. Given 10 of them we had introduced to you previously, but still, it was a lot of mechanics to all be in a single set. And there just was so much going on. It was just, and the draft environment proved to be a lot more complicated than we realized. Because part of it was, what we did is, when you came to the pre-release for Dragon's Maze, you got a box that had you got to choose one of the 10 guilds, and then also you got, which was a secret second guild, and the way it worked was it was one of the guilds from the other set. So if you picked a guild from Return of Ravnica, it was from Gatecrash. If you picked a guild from Gatecrash, it was from Return of Ravnica. It was a guild that shared a color with the one you chose. So for example, let's say I chose what's a good example? I chose Izzet. So blue-red. So blue-red is from Return to Ravnica. That meant I would get one of the guilds that had red in it, which in Gatecrash was either Boros or Gruul, or one of the guilds that had blue in it, which was either Simic or Dimir. I couldn't get Orzhov. There was no overlap there. And so the idea was you picked one and then got another and help you for building in the pre-release. But the fact that we had to sort of do that was a sign of how complicated it got. The one nice thing about the large sets were you only had five options and five two-color combinations. With 10 and the drafting, wow, there's so many permutations of what you could do. It was a little bit overwhelming. And the other thing was Gatecrash ended up being a little bit more aggressive than Return to Ravnica, and so it warped a little bit the drafting. It was a neat idea, and it was cool, and I liked the idea of use a set, use a different set, use both sets. I liked the novelty and the coolness of how the draft was worked differently, and that each draft was distinctly different. The other mistake we made, which was interesting, was the name. So Dragon's Maze refers to a particular dragon, Niv-Mizzet. Niv-Mizzet is the one that's setting this all up. He learned all about the maze, what was it called? The maze Azor was the original creator of Azorius. He had created this maze, and it was figured out by Niv-Mizzet, and then there were 10 maze runners, and anyway, for those that know the story. But one of the things, this set also, by the way, introduced Raul Zarek, who had been originally introduced in one of the early Duels of the Planeswalkers, but this is the first time he showed up in a set with a card. But anyway, Dragon's Maze was Dragon apostrophe S, a dragon, who Niv-Mizzet. But when you put the name Dragon in the set, there was this belief like, oh, it's a set about dragons. I see dragons in the name. And there was literally no creature hyphen dragon in the set. There was one card, I think, that made things into dragons. But, and the dragon, Niv-Mizzet, he wasn't Return to Ravnica. The dragon that's mentioned in the title, he's not in the set. So there were some expectations set up that the set really didn't deliver on. And one of the big things we realize is you have to be very careful about perception, what people expect, because you want to set up expectations correctly and then deliver on them. And Dragon Maze didn't do that. It is one of the things that got us to do Dragons of Tarkir, of saying, wow, people were so sad that there weren't dragons. We really shouldn't make a dragon set. And so that's one thing that definitely led to us later doing Dragons of Tarkir. Okay, May 17th through the 19th was Pro Tour Dragon's Maze in San Diego, United States. It was a block and structure tournament, meaning you got to play with all three sets from the Return of Ravnica block. So you got to play with Return of Ravnica and Gatecrash and Dragon's Maze. And it had Dragon's Maze booster draft, which meant you drafted with all three sets. So it was a very Return to Ravnica block-oriented Pro Tour. So Craig Wesker, United States, ended up defeating Dusty Ochoa, also the United States. Okay, then later that summer, Let's see. Oh, actually, before we get to that, July 13th was the pre-release, and July 19th was the release of Magic 2014, the core set for the year. So remember, the core set is always named a year later. So if, I think I've explained this, but one more time for people that don't know. The reason is we put these into mass, and mass won't hold things that have a year that, like, if it says 2013 on it, once it's 2014, they won't carry things that say 2013, that it looks dated. And so in order to create a set that would be around for a whole year, because the goal of the core set is to put it out and keep it on shelves because it's a beginning of product, we needed to have a name in which the mass market would keep it. And so we would use the name. We were modeling after how cars work. Like when you buy a car, the model of the car is always the next year. Anyway, the set was a normal large set, 249 cards, so 101, 80, 53, 15. So 101 commons, 80 uncommons, 53 rares, 15 mythic rares. The set was led designed by Mark Globus. So Mark Globus came in fourth or fifth for the first great designer search. We actually hired four people from the first great designer search, and then would later hire a fifth person, although that fifth person was not just in the first great designer search, but was in the second great designer search as well, Scott Van Essen. But anyway, Alexis Janssen, who we just talked about leading Dragon's Maze, Ken Nagel, who I talked about, mentioned him already in this podcast, and a guy named Grant Hopkins, who does digital stuff, does a lot of programming, but we borrow him from time to time. He's a really good designer, obviously. And then Mark Globus. Mark Globus originally got hired to do digital, and then he became friendly with a lot of R&D people and ended up coming over to R&D, and now he's one of the producers in R&D. He oversees a lot of the structuring of how things happen, and he and I actually work closely together. Anyway, I think this was the first time he led a set. So for those who pay attention, there now have been five different finalists from the Great Designer Search to lead a Magic set. Alexis Janssen this year led Dragon Maze. Ken Nagel has led a whole bunch of sets. Most recently, I think he led Fate Reforged. Mark Globus led this, Magic 2014. Ethan Fleischer led Journey to Nyx. He's going to lead, he led Oath of the Gatewatch, which you guys will see shortly. And then Sean Main just recently led Magic Origins, as well as Conspiracy. So anyway, there's five alumni, all who've led sets. Or not alumni, but, you know, people who we first discovered through the Great Designer Search. So in fact, it has been a great designer search. That name has lived up to its thing. So the one thing about Magic 2014, its slogan was Ignite Your Spark. Chandra was the main focal point. If you played Duels of the Planeswalkers, you were following Chandra's story. The new thing in the set was Slivers came back. So that was a little bit controversial. So we did two things. One is, we over the years have changed how we've done tribal effects mechanically, so the tribal effects only affect your things. Originally, Goblin King made all goblins +1/+1, and so if your opponent had goblins, it helped them too. And eventually we decided that, A, people didn't necessarily believe that their stuff was supposed to help their opponent, and it just didn't make for necessarily great gameplay of, I have to, like, oh, I have a Goblin King. Oh, wait, how many goblins do you have to play versus how many I have to play? And so we changed it. Slivers hadn't yet been changed because the last time we did Slivers was Time Spiral, and we felt like, you know, it was a set all about nostalgia. We didn't want to change how Slivers worked in a set in which we were being all nostalgic. So this is the next time we introduced them. So mechanically we changed them. And then the art team wanted to give them a different look. The look they currently had, it just was a hard look to make a lot of differences to it. So they were trying to change it up a little bit. It did not go over well. Especially, I think, how they looked went pretty poorly. But a combination of we mechanically changed them and we made them look differently. The audience who loves Slivers was upset by it. I believe that we have, we're going to stick with mechanical change. This is how we do tribal stuff now. But I do believe that we are willing to, we're in re-examining it. We've sort of opened up and said, you know, there's different slivers in different places. They look a little differently, but we're not abandoning the old sliver look. So I think you will see I doubt we've seen the last of slivers, and I think you will see old sliver style slivers, visually again. Oh, by the way, the lead developer, I talked about the lead designer. The lead designer is Globus. The lead developer was a man named Dave Guskin. So Dave actually started in online media, in programming. He was one of the programmers. And he ended up coming into R&D, and he spent a lot of time doing what we call experience design, If you know like a lot of the stuff at Theros and the Hell Vault and all that sort of stuff that was wrapped around how we used to do pre-releases, that was Dave Guskin's doing. So, anyway, what else happened here? We also changed the legend rule with this set, and we changed indestructible became a keyword. We also changed unblockable to cannot be blocked. We actually tried to make unblockable a keyword, but the problem was we use it in so many different ways that it just didn't work. That so much you're unblockable due to a certain thing. Anyway, we tried to make unblockable a keyword for technical reasons. We couldn't do it. We did manage to make indestructible a keyword. Before, it was just an English word that had a normal meaning. But the fact that it wasn't a keyword was confusing people, and people were treating it as it was a keyword, so we finally just changed it to a keyword. The legend rule changed to say, before, whenever a legend came into play, if the other legend was in play, we would destroy it. That now it said, when it came into play, A, each player was allowed to have one, so I could have a legendary character, you could have the same legendary character. And if I brought one into play, I then chose which one went away under the new rules. Which allowed you to do interesting things with certain planeswalker abilities and such. Okay, next, August 23rd was From the Vault 20. So this was 2013, which happened to be the 20th anniversary of Magic the Gathering. I'll be honest, we really underplayed the 20th anniversary. I was kind of sad. I love celebrating. I thought it was awesome that Magic was 20 years old. The feeling at the time, I don't know. I think there's some that believe that, like, it dated the product or something. I don't know. There were some people that believed that. So we did very, very little to sort of celebrate the 20th anniversary. In products, we did one thing to celebrate it, which is this product, Dual Decks. Not Dual Decks, From the Vault 20. So instead, normally From the Vaults have 15 cards in them. This one has 20 cards in it, including a Jace the Mind Sculptor, and these are all in foil. So it was definitely, it was a very sought-after product. Normal From the Vault, there's not a lot made. But this one in particular was extra hard to get your hands on. A combination of just the anniversary, and there's 20 cards, and Jace in it and such. Okay, next, September 6th was Dual Decks, Heroes versus Monsters. So the second Dual Deck is usually tied to one of the set releases. We had Theros, we were going to Greek mythology. And Magic luckily has a lot of Greek mythology in it. And so we were able to sort of craft a Greek feeling of Heroes versus Monsters. Because one of the things about Theros, I'll get to in a second, is a big role of it was Heroes and Monsters. And so we definitely had a Dual Deck that sort of played it up. And we were able to do some teases of some upcoming cards from Theros. You got some preview cards. And then luckily there was enough stuff in Magic that was Greek mythologically feeling, because a lot of early Magic owes stuff to Greek mythology. I think Tolkien and Greek mythology are the two biggest influences on Richard in making Alpha, for example. Okay. September 21st was a release, and September 21st was the pre-release, September 27th was the release of Theros, a.k.a. Friends, Romans, Countrymen. Which is funny that we had a set with Romans in the name, and it was about not Roman mythology, but Greek mythology, and people always get weirded out when the code names are somewhat close to the theme, and the code names get picked before the theme, so it's always happenstance when they're even remotely connected. Anyway, there's a normal large set, 249 cards, 101 commons, 80 uncommons, 53 rares, and 15 mythic rares. I led the design. Eric Lauer led the development. So the theme I talked about when the set originally came out was obviously the Greek mythology set. I said it was gods, heroes, and monsters were sort of the major themes. So the set had a strong enchantment component. Well, so gods. In order to reflect the gods, we decided to have an enchantment component that we were going to bring, and we made the enchantment component the effect of gods on the world. So, for example, there were a lot of enchantment creatures. We in Magic, other than one enchantment creature in Future Sight as a hint of something we might do, we had never done enchantment creatures before. They showed up for the first time here. We had a mechanic called Bestow, which showed up in the first set in Theros, which were enchantment creatures that could also double as auras. And so you could choose whether to play them as a creature aura or play them as a creature. If you play them as a creature aura and the creature they enchanted died, they would fall off and become creatures. I think all the enchantment creatures in the first set were Bestow creatures. Later in the block would have enchantment creatures that weren't bestow creatures, but with the, in the first set we did that. We also had a lot of strong enchantment themes. There was a cycle of gods, the five gods, which were all mythic rares. All were enchantment creatures. They had each had a magical item that was an enchantment artifact. First time we'd ever done that. So there definitely was a strong enchantment theme that ran through. And also the gods, we had a mechanic called Devotion, which was us taking a mechanic, an old mechanic from Eventide, called Chroma, that didn't quite go over as well as I'd hoped, but I had high potential for. I really thought it was a mechanic that was going to be this awesome mechanic that it just never quite hit the audience, and I decided it was time. I decided that it needed a second chance. I thought it made a lot of sense here. It's called Devotion, and the idea was the people cared about their gods, and the gods cared about people caring about them, and so the more devoted you were to your god, the more powerful the cards would become. And so basically the way it did is it counted the number of colored mana in your mana cost of cards on your battlefield. Slightly different than Chroma. Chroma also counted colored mana symbols, but it would look in different places, not always on the battlefield. And Devotion was a little more locked. It's like permanence on the battlefield, that's what it looks at. Ended up being a pretty strong mechanic, much stronger than Chroma, which also helped it. And there were a lot of monocolor decks being played in Standard at the time. And other formats, because Devotion actually was pretty powerful. That was gods. Then there was gods heroes. So the heroes had a mechanic called Heroic, which were creatures that whenever they were targeted would generate an effect. Maybe they get a +1/+1 counter. Maybe you draw a card. Maybe something else happens. Maybe, you know, they temporarily get some kind of boost or bonus. But the cool idea was that these heroic creatures, you wanted to combo and target them. And so it definitely... And one of the ways to target them was definitely putting enchantments on them. So heroic creatures played nicely with Bestow. But it definitely also... One of the things we were trying to do with the set is we wanted things to get bigger and grow. That big part of Greek mythology was you go on adventures and you start from a small farm boy, but then you become a hero. And so we wanted you to sort of... The heroic mechanic, you could watch things grow and become more powerful. For monsters, we had a mechanic called Monstrous, which was an activated ability you can only use once per game. When you used it, the creature would get bigger, would get some number +1/+1 counters, and often either it would trigger something or get an extra ability. But you had these monsters that were scary, and then they notched up when you had enough mana to become extra scary. And Monstrous, when I get to 2014, I'll talk about it. Monstrous was weird in that it was in the first set and the third set, but not the second set, something we very rarely do. But I'll talk about that. Next, in 2014, the next podcast that I get when I get to 2014 won't be the next podcast, but I'll get there eventually. Anything else? Oh, the set also had Scry, which actually was added in development to help smooth things. But as Greek mythology is all about omens and things, Scry actually thematically made a lot of sense. We would later make Scry evergreen. That would happen in Magic Origins, which would happen 2 years later. But this was definitely us realizing how valuable Scry was, and one of the big things that made us go, you know what, maybe we should just always have Scry. Okay, next. Theros, by the way, did very well. It had some problems in the expansions, which once again, when I get expansions, next, 2014 podcast, I'll talk about that. But Theros and stuff did really well. People liked Greek mythology quite a bit. It went over very well. The gods, especially the monocolor gods, went over quite well. Devotion was probably the biggest hit of the mechanics, but Monstrous was really well received. Heroic was very well received. Bestow was a little less received, only because it was a little less clear to people how it worked. And we made it such that if you try to attach it like an aura and you got rid of the creature, that normally if it was an aura, it would just go to the graveyard. But because it has an option to become a creature, we let it stay in play because we were trying to make them just harder to hose. And that was a little unintuitive for some people, although most people, once they understood it, liked it, only because it just made the card better. But it was a little bit unintuitive. Okay, October 11th through the 13th, Pro Tour Theros in Dublin. It was Standard for Constructed part of it, and Theros Booster Draft for the limited part. Jeremy Dizani of France defeated Pierre Dagen of France. It was all French finals. I forgot something! Speaking all French. I skipped over. Well, this is important. I talked all about the Magic 2014, and I skipped over an important thing that happened in July, which was the World Championship. I should get back and talk about this. So July 31st through August 2nd in Amsterdam was the World Championship. So a 16-person tournament. The World Championship now is an invitation tournament. At the time, there were 16. Now we've moved to 24, but at the time, there were 16. And Shahar Shenhar from Israel defeated Reed Duke from the United States in a very... Reed looked like he was going to take the whole thing. It was a matchup really in his favor. And it came down to the final game. Shenhar pulled it off and managed to win. I don't want to give away the spoilers of 2014... But he might go on to win twice in a row. So definitely no one's ever been in... Actually, until 2014, no one had ever been in a finals of a... the finals of a world championship twice. That would happen two times next year. Well, anyway, sneaking ahead to 2014. Anyway, also that same weekend... although August 2nd to the 4th, so the first there was 3 days of the World Championship, then 3 days, we had a day off, and 3 days of the Magic World Cup the World Magic Cup, said it wrong, the World Magic Cup, and that's where a whole bunch of countries, 50-some countries, all came to compete. Each country is a four-person team, and in the finals, France, led by Raphael Levy, defeated Hungary. And it is definitely, I don't think France had ever won the team event before. They had been in contention. They'd been in the finals many times. I don't think they'd ever won before. So it was a big feather in the cap for France, for Raphael. Anyway, so it is definitely, that's why I want to talk about France on France. But wait a minute, France did well this year. So I skipped over that. One place we jump around on the paper. Oh, also, I forgot that in July 19th, technically, was the Deck Builder's Toolkit. Every core set has a new toolkit tied to it. And July 19th, we did that. Anyway, back to November. Sorry, jumping around here. Okay, November 1st was Commander 2013. I did not write down. So Commander is 100-card decks. What was the gimmick of 2013? I think this was the second time. I think we had done Commander decks. They were very popular. We couldn't get them out quick enough, so we did Commander's Arsenal, which I think was 2012. And I think 2013 was the second ones. So let's see if I can remember what that was. I think the first ones did three color and did wedges, I believe. So the second one must have done shards. So my guess is this was the shard one. I think Mark Gottlieb led the design for this. I did not write this down. But I believe Mark Gottlieb led the design for it, and that it was shard-based. I don't remember if there was some other gimmick tied to it, but I believe it was shard-based. Anyway, it's something we do every year. There's 100, it's 500 card pre-made decks. There's 100 card decks. They're commander decks, meaning they come with a legendary creature. Actually, they come with three legendary creatures, but one main one to be your commander, and the other two can be backup commanders. And then it's a 100 card deck in which it's a singleton, means every card only appears once. And each deck has a very specific theme to it. And the decks are made not just to play fun unto themselves, but to play with each other. And the commander format has been very, very popular. People like it quite a bit. Finally, the final act of the year, November 15th, was the 2013 Holiday Gift Box. Which came with, it had a nice box, and it had four boosters and 20 lands from Theros. So the story of the gift box, I'm not sure if I've told the story. Odds are I have, I repeat stories. But in case I haven't, for years, even when I first got here 20 years ago, we've always been trying to figure out the right kind of gift box for December. So one of the things that people don't realize is, December actually is a very slow month for us. And the reason is that it's the holiday season. People are spending money buying gifts for the holidays. And what we've discovered is that it's just a poor time for us. And that when we put out sets, people get focused on our set. And so it's actually better for us to basically be active when there's not other things going on. And so December has proved to be one of the slowest months for us. But one of the things we always have wanted to do and have tried many times over the years is say, well, you know what the good thing is? What we want to do during December is have a product out that people who are friends and families of Magic players could go, oh, that's a Magic thing. I could buy that and give it as a gift. And we want the Magic players to be happy that their friends bought them a Magic-related gift. And for years, we tried to figure out how to do that. The big secret, by the way, rested in not, well, the contents were important, but the bigger secret was the name. I actually had one meeting where we were brainstorming the set, and I said, okay, I have one brainstorm. You want to sell the set? You want to get people to buy it for the holidays? Could we please call it the Magic the Gathering Holiday Gift Box? And we finally used the name, which I think is a big part of just one of the things about people who don't know Magic is it's very daunting. There's lots of Magic things. How do you know what to buy? But when you see Holiday Gift Box on it, you go, you know, maybe they like this for the holidays. And then what we learned was we made a nice gift box, so the box itself that the players can use. And look, just put Magic cards in it. That's what players want. We experimented with all sorts of different things. In the end, you know what Magic players want? The latest Magic cards is what they want. And so Theros is the set that was out, you know, just came out this fall. And so how to gift box for 2013? Just has Theros stuff in it. It had Theros boosters, Theros land, and a nice gift box that you could have. And the gift box has proven to be quite popular. I mean, for a gift box, it is... I guess your expectations have to match. But it is definitely something that we've continued to do. Anyway, as I drive up to Wizards, that, my friends, is 2013. It was an interesting year. I think 2013 was the fifth year in a row that we had had the best year Magic had ever had. That 5 years earlier, Magic had the best year it ever had, and then the year after that, again, it had the best year it ever had, and did that 5 years in a row. The trend continues, but we're only talking about 2013. But anyway, 2013 was a good year. It was an up year. Return to Ravnica block was pretty popular. Theros, especially the first set, was very popular. A lot of fun Pro Tour play around the world. A lot of supplemental products that people enjoyed. But anyway, that, my friends, was 2013 in a nutshell. But I'm in my parking space. So we all know that means it's time to end my drive to work. So instead of talking Magic, it's time for me to be making Magic. I'll see you guys next time.